Sick of procurement bottlenecks? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement, so your business keeps moving and growing. Score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Go to bill.com/procurement200. bill.com/procurement200.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Does that shock you, just how casual this is? We don't normally see, I guess, this level of casualness when talking about something like this, or someone who just got caught with a, you know, or is admitting to such a crime.
The reason it doesn't surprise me, Tony, is I think working gangs for all those years, working organized crime, terrible crimes people do to one another, horrible. And you know, and then they go around and talk about a murder in text messages or notes or on wires. And literally they're talking in this casual, that's the perfect word for it, in a casual discussion and vernacular, like, again, I said, like, picking up your laundry. It's so everyday. But remember, when this is something that you've done and it's been in your mind for a week and a half, and he doesn't care. I mean, at the end of the day, he doesn't care about Charlie Kirk. He doesn't care about the ramifications. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I know he was book smart. I saw the grades. Yes, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, yeah.
A lot of people who are book smart are not common sense and everybody's smart. And that's one of these guys. This is one of these guys that's stupid, you know, when it comes to everyday life, I think.
I mean, did he want to get caught? I mean, that's the other part. I mean, it's like, look, he can't just be now realizing or thinking, gee, if I'm going to do this, there might be a serial number on the family weapon or... I mean, they're just very elementary things here that seem to have completely evaded this man's thinking. And that's what makes it very like, huh? You're realizing this now in a text to your lover?
Well, it's clear he didn't take the same courses that, you know, BK Brian Koberger, who murdered the Idaho students, took, right?
Or maybe the lack of course.
College course.
Yeah.
Because it's clear he didn't do criminology, because you're right. He's failing every aspect of 101. He doesn't understand about fingerprints. He doesn't even consider seemingly DNA. He doesn't use gloves. He doesn't cover up his face. He doesn't cover up his body. He's a hot mess, which I've said from the minute this crime went down. I said, this is the sloppiest killer. There is no way he's affiliated with Mossad or with any... Yeah. Or any other group, because they would have made sure he went out and did the mission appropriately. This is how a school kid would do it. And he's a school kid.
But he thinks to change clothes. That's a big portion of this. And that he needs to disassemble the weapon before getting off the roof. It's like he did know some steps, but it's like, why would you do this, but not that?
Well, he took the obvious steps. Guys, as a point of getting that rifle where he needed to do it, he needed to remove the stock. So we needed the screwdriver to remove the stock, to make it smaller, to likely put the receiver and the barrel down his pant leg, from what I can tell. I tried this, and I put the whole gun down my pant leg, which I could run just fine with it. I wasn't moving around like him. But maybe I was thinking, if he took that receiver off, or if it was moving, you know, he's trying to... He's like moving. It made everything difficult for him to walk normally.
Yeah.
But the point is, he understands that the practicality of getting the gun from point A to point B, and then he worries, well, in case I'm seen, I'm going to change my clothes. But that, as you know, is at the minuscule level of what you need to do to cover up a crime.
I don't do a lot with them, so I'm not super knowledgeable, but I just would think the serial number thing, leaving it out in the woods or in the grass, wherever he left it, would be obvious things too. But I hear what you're saying completely, where it's some people can be very mechanically intelligent, but then have no social intelligence. And not that this is social intelligence, but I guess it would be a form of it, you know, of just how things work out there. Again, 22, there's plenty of, you know, talk to a lot of 22-year-olds. They're not the brightest all the time. I know I wasn't the brightest at that point either. I just wonder, I don't know. I guess I'm kind of baffled by the stupidity of what he was able to carry out and the stupidity to which he did at all levels.
You know, he had this drop point that I think was somehow going to be a savior. Ooh, if I have a drop point, then I could get my car and come back and get it. It never even occurred to him the place would be crawling with police after an event like
this. What exactly? That is just, like, why would you not, again, what the hell? There's always the old radio adage. We used to do this stupid bit where it was stupid criminal of the week, you know, and it would always be just idiotic things that people do. And they exist to this day. We have too many stories. This seems like it's that, with far greater repercussions than the coffee shop got robbed.
Well, let's be clear. That's why the FBI and law enforcement is usually successful. It's not necessarily that we're some sort of brilliant investigators as much as it is that the criminals are such idiots and they make mistake after mistake after mistake and usually leave a really easy trail for us, especially a 22-year-old who's never had any run-ins with the law before. He literally didn't think about anything. And as you well said, he spent a week and a half planning this out. It wasn't long enough.
Do you think he's stunned that he was caught? I mean, I know when we saw the photo that he was on, he was wearing the suicide vest. He talked about suicide ideation and things of that nature. I'm wondering if this is something where, this is, I don't know, maybe subconsciously or consciously, but he wanted to die. And he this was his way of going out, or he thought maybe this would be his way of going out. I don't know.
So I really don't think that. I think that this is a typical, and I hate to throw the word narcissist around. I'm not going to say it clinically. But
all roads lead to it.
Yeah. He really thought he wasn't going to get caught. He's like, listen, they don't have any way to catch me. Yeah, the serial number isn't going to go back to me. I mean, like they can't take step two and say grandfather could equal son and grandson. So he definitely, I think, just thought he would get away with it. You know, everything's going smoothly. They didn't find it yet. So to me, it's just somebody just like Luigi Mangione, just like Brian Koberger, just like Larry McVeigh, or Timothy McVeigh, sorry. They think they're going to get away with it because they're so smart.
Are you surprised at how quick he turned himself in? I mean, when it looked like people were coning in on him, his family obviously going, that looks like our kid. I can't imagine that moment. And then they sit him down and it feels like a full house moment. Did you do this? I did this. Let's call the pastor. I mean, and I'm not trying to make light, but it was like, this is how this story ends. Like, I did it. I'm going to go turn myself. I was kind of surprised by that moment, too. It did kind of feel like an old sitcom where everything at the end of the story, people realize their faults and then they go do the right thing. Again, not how I would imagine something like this to happen, but none of this story is something I would think would have happened to begin with. But number two, how it's playing out and the characters involved.
Well, when you look at it, Tony, right, if you wrote a movie or a segment from a drama series and you had it play out this way, everyone in your audience would go, oh yeah, right.
That like, what is this, Full House? With a horrible, horrible plot line? I mean, that's how it feels.
Yeah, nobody would believe it, that he was stupid enough not to wear gloves. And that is what plays, I think, with people having problems accepting this.
Yeah.
But we're seeing it so up close. Cash Patel is so, crystal clear on what happened in terms of his transparency for the agency now, law enforcement, this prosecutor laying out his whole case. Now, we are going to see it in the preliminary hearing coming up. Mm-hmm. So he's giving us a flash of what we're going to see anyway, because there will be no indictment. There will be no grand jury. It's going to play out before us, which was different from the Idaho case and most other cases that we see. So he realizes that this is stuff that's going to come out. So that's why he gave us the playbook a little bit early. But the bottom line is, Tony, that's what I think is so unique to what's happening now, before in other cases, and I'll keep going back to Timothy McVeigh because he was another guy that I think is very similar in how he thought. We didn't see it all play out like this because we didn't have social media. True. Mainstream media didn't have these connects, and everything was kept, you know, locked behind closed doors in terms of this evidence. Now we get to see it, and everybody's going, wow, really? Things happen like this? They do.
He's, and again, this is a piece of information we have as of right now, and if I'm off on it, let me know. From what we've understood, he's not necessarily cooperating with the FBI as of this moment in time. I found that to be another interesting point, just because it's like he's ready to give it up in with the family. He's admitting he did it to his Discord group. He's admitting he did it to his family. He's admitting it in text. He's admitting it here and there, and now he's not cooperating?
Well, Tony, he probably has an attorney. I think he's got him attorney, and that was part of, you know, I'm sure the friend who's the minister, who was the former law enforcement officer, I'm sure he said, you got to get him an attorney so his rights are protected, one. And so I think he's just, you know.
Maybe he's just saying, I'm not talking till I get an attorney.
Yeah, and who he shouldn't. He shouldn't be talking.
Sure.
And also, secondarily to that, listen, he is facing the death penalty. And with all the evidence we can see so far, this seems really strong of a
Pretty
case.
Pretty much guaranteed at this point, I would say.
Well, the fingerprint on the trigger kills it.
Yeah.
If it's your grandparent, and they could say, well, he had it in the house. That's when the trigger. Yeah, okay. Let a jury mull that all over with you add everything else up. It's like the sheath with the Idaho case. All right, you've got all of this and DNA on the sheath, and now you have DNA on the trigger and on the gun. It's so problematic. I think it's a strong case. Only in this case, I just can't imagine that they're going to bargain. I really don't think they're going to bargain way down the road, but we'll see.
What is there to bargain for? I mean, he's admitted it. I mean, well, he's admitted to family. I mean, we don't know, has he admitted it to law? Because there's a difference between I admit this to family or law enforcement. I mean, so where does that stand as of this second?
Well, he's admitted it to family, and they would be calling the father. That remember, the mother was the first to recognize her son and then went to the father. And then the gun comes out. And they're, can you send me a picture of grandpa's gun so I know you have it? And then, of course, he says, oh, I think I'm going to ignore that one. So you're right. It's such a strong case. Look, I think this guy is facing, you know, well, he is going to face death, the death penalty, unless something severely changes in some way, which I can't imagine.
I mean, is this what domestic radicalization looks like now? It's quiet, it's fast, and it is deeply personal. I mean, because that really... If we're trying to figure out what the trigger is here, I mean, it could have simply been Charlie Kirk is coming to town and I disagree with him and I want him dead. Is that it? Just Charlie Kirk showing up, or is there something deeper going on? I mean, obviously, from what we can glean right now, I'm going to assume he probably did not agree with Charlie on most things. And again, that I guess would be going back to the triggering event being Charlie Kirk coming to town. But we don't see a whole lot of other things in his life that are, you know, super triggering. I get his family probably did not agree with his lifestyle in that. But then from that to this, it's like, okay, what the hell's happening here?
Well, the family talks about a discussion they had with their son, where it's brought up that he's going to be in Orem and he's going to be doing his, you know, prove me wrong, you know, debating. And apparently Tyler Robinson reacts to that and says words to the effect of, oh, well, that's a quote unquote stupid place for him to do that. And goes on a diatribe about how he disagrees with Charlie Kirk. And the bottom line is, I think that Charlie Kirk really was more integral and touched a certain, you know, the 20-year-olds, right? I mean, personally, for me, I didn't watch Charlie Kirk, but I remember different TikToks and things like that that would come in my feed that would be snippets of what he said, right? But some of the youth are very well-versed about Kirk. I mean, much more well-known in that age parameter. So I think he very well knew Charlie Kirk and followed him in a negative, visceral way. And he's like, oh my gosh, he's what, 2.5, 3 hours away? I think I'm going to drive up there.
So, yeah, where I can, when you try to put your mind into that gymnastics of someone who would do this, it would be, yeah, I mean, he could stand for far, far worse than being just something that has a very, very different opinion of you, no matter how different it may be. Some will take that to quite an extreme rather than move on and, okay, you can have a different opinion, then it's okay. We're going to go our different ways. Don't have to be part of each other's lives. Some will want to extinguish the other opinion completely. Does the FBI have models for identifying these short fuse actors? Because it seems like I think we just lit a tinderbox of a fireworks stand of short fuse actors here that I'm really scared to see what the coming weeks and months have ahead of us.
Well, I think many of us have put forth that the FBI is going to have to completely change its direction, law enforcement as a whole, in terms of evaluating individuals who are saying things online and then appropriately investigating those. This has just all got to change, because if you look at school shooters, mass shooters, assassins, it's not that they don't talk about it. They talk about it. They write about it before it ever happens. Mm-hmm. We need to get better about identifying that. And it's going to have to be done through AI programming, I think.
And there's a big difference, though, between somebody out there saying, I'm going to go shoot somebody, and someone who disagrees with someone for their political beliefs. And I feel like we're entering some pretty scary territory right now, where just those disagreements, not any threat, not any I hate you, not even any I want to hurt you, or just nothing, just simple disagreement right now seems to be on the line of possible chopping block for some. That's a scary place to be in.
Well, I agree. I mean, certainly our constitutional right of free speech has to be protected, but there is a line there. You can't threaten. And if you have somebody saying, I can't wait to murder this guy, I'm going to get a gun.
I agree. All for that. Go after those people. Yeah. That's not protected free speech. I guess what I worry about is just anyone disagreeing on whatever side it may be they disagree with. And then one side having... either more power politically or more power in terms of activated people out there. Basically what we're talking about here, these, you know, kind of short fuse actors, if you will then go, oh my gosh, you disagree with me on X issue. We must silence you. But the person it's not doing anything. It's just regular political, you know, debate that we have in our country, which Charlie, you know, is championed, that's, you know, what he would say he would have championed in a lot of parts of his life. But that's a scary point. And how is this going to be deciphered of what is dangerous speech and what is not dangerous speech, I guess?
Well, and I know what you're speaking of. And certainly Pam Bondi recently came out and, you know, was talking about hate speech. And there wasn't a lot of defining that, but how I took that is hate speech that leads to a threat. And the threat is where you cross the line.
Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, anybody could say something that they disagree with, and then the more extreme person could go, yeah, I disagree with that, and then it leads someone else to, would this have to be in the same line of the same individual making the threat that makes the hate speech? Because one could say, well, this person disagreed vehemently with it, but they didn't make any threat, they just disagreed, because we're allowed to do that in this country. And then someone else jumps on that is more extreme. I mean, we're walking a very fine line right now.
Well, I think it's going to be very interesting. I totally agree with you. Kash Patel said before the hearings that specifically they're looking at more than 20. In fact, he scoffed at the number 20 that were involved in this Discord group that that Tyler Robinson was involved in. He scoffed at it and he said, listen, there's way more than 20 and we're going to be looking at everybody. I guarantee agents are already knocking on the doors of those people that were involved in that Discord, those people that were involved. Were they egging him on? Were they as hard as lover twigs? What all happened to get him, as you said, from point A to point murdering somebody in a week. What all ignited that? Or was it just him? The FBI is going to be getting to the bottom of it. So to your point, that begs the question, does that mean just ideologically, I push you and push you and push you, but I don't make any threats? Can you be charged?
And look, I can understand that area. I think the concern a lot of American citizens have right now more so is just going on Facebook and disagreeing. Disagreeing on either directions in some points where if I say this out loud, what could the consequence be? And we've never been in a place where it's like, oh, this could actually, like, me, not a threat, but just someone disagreeing with a policy, whether this or that could lead to much further action than just somebody, you know, giving you a thumbs down or disagreeing and making a nasty comment to you.
Well, I think the other thing that needs to be considered, I think what you're talking about should not be in jeopardy. But, you know, they just arrested, I think it was a 12 or 13-year-old, I think it was 13, who had a bunch of guns, who said he was angry, who wanted to kill, right? So he's saying all these things.
Good. Arrest him.
And they arrested him, but then they just let him back out, by the way, on bond, which I'm like, oh, my gosh, what are we doing here?
Well, we let rapists and murderers and all that out, and then we prosecute the dads when they rescue their daughters who have been kidnapped. So only in America, as Brooks and Dunn would say. Maybe it's time we do a new version of that song with new lyrics. What do you think?
I think so.
I don't think they would want to sing them. I think that's the problem. So much to talk about. It was so fascinating. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for coming on. And as I've said to Robin, too, just being voices of reason in a very, very confusing time right now, and being able to talk about these things without having politics being involved, but addressing the concerns that so many people have. I think that's very important. So thank you so much for coming on. Break the Case is your podcast. You can check it out anywhere you get podcasts and on YouTube. Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer. Be sure to check that out. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.